I will call this remote hearing of the Local Government Division to order. Today is February 24th, 2021. This meeting is held in accordance with Rule 10.01, which was passed and allows for remote hearings. All remote hearings are recorded and live streamed by House Public Information. Josh, if you would take the roll, please.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Representative Mason.
Present.
Representative Elkins.
Present.
Representative Quam. Representative Berg.
Present.
Representative Bolden.
Present.
Representative Hewitt. Representative Mecklen.
Present.
Representative Olson.
Present.
Representative Joachim.
Present.
Representative Quam.
Present.
Representative Hewitt. All but Representative Hewitt are present.
All right, thank you. So that we do have a quorum. The next item are the minutes for Wednesday, February 17th. Representative Quam, have you had a chance to read the minutes?
I would so move.
Okay. All those in favor of the minutes as presented, say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. The minutes are approved. Welcome, Representative Cagle, to our committee. And you have House File 820. And I will move that for you. And would you like to do the amendment first? And I'm not hearing you. Representative Cagle?
Sure, Madam Chair. If you can move the author's amendment. It's an amendment to get the bill in the shape I'd like. When this bill was heard in the Senate, there was discussion about the need to disclose locations of those participating in meetings remotely under the military or medical exemption. When we first passed this law, we didn't realize we would need to do so, and it doesn't make sense to have people disclose what military base they are at or their home address, and this amendment fixes that. And the Senate is intending to adopt the same amendment when the Senate companion goes to the floor.
Okay. It sounds like you just explained the amendment. So all those in favor of the amendment, please say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Okay. You have the amendment is adopted. Please proceed with House File 820.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This is my annual open meetings law, it seems like. I've been working on the open meetings issue for a couple of years now, most recently the last legislative session. And we passed a bill that I hope would address some of the pandemic-related issues, but unfortunately it wasn't enough. And so that's why House File 820 is before the committee. House File 820 is a compromise bill that Ms. Beattie from the League of Cities will discuss in greater detail. What we're trying to address is the limitations on elected officials who have health concerns and facing the length of the COVID-19 pandemic, we needed to come back and ask for a little more. And so before I turn it over to Ms. Beattie, I want to point out the joint letter of support in your packet from the League of Minnesota Cities, Minnesota School Board Association, Minnesota Association of Townships, and the Minnesota Association of Counties. And with that, I will turn it over to my testifiers.
Okay. And if you would identify yourself and proceed, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think I must be first to testify. Madam Chair and committee members, thank you for having me. My name is Patricia Beattie. I am General Counsel for the League of Minnesota Cities. Thank you to the committee for hearing this bill and to Representative Cagle for authoring the bill. As you know, I'm certain that you know, the League is a membership organization. We represent 853 of the 835 of the 853 cities. So just about every city in the state is a member of the League. One of the priorities for our members this year has been helping them deal with the response to the pandemic and trying to conduct the public business during these very uncertain and challenging times. The House file that's before you, 820, is consistent with this focus. We have found that when cities are choosing to hold in-person meetings, which a number of them are starting to do on a regular basis, which is allowed if the meeting can be conducted safely, there are some elected officials on our governing bodies who have health-related conditions that preclude them from attending these meetings in person. Oftentimes, the elected official herself or maybe one of her close family members is at a higher risk for contracting COVID-19, or if contracted, falls into that higher risk category for serious complications and hospitalization. So in-person meetings are not really an option for some of those elected officials. The legislature, as Representative Cagle said, did address this last session by passing the medical exception to the open meeting law. But this medical exception can only be used 3 times in a calendar year. Because the pandemic, unfortunately, has lasted longer than anyone expected or would anticipate, the cap for the medical exception is being met very quickly. There are some cases where 3 meetings in a calendar year already some elected officials have used the number of exceptions that they can for those in-person meetings. Mm-hmm. So the result is it's impossible, almost impossible, for an elected official to serve her community and do her official job duties in these circumstances. The impacted elected officials, because of kind of this dilemma in the law, are left in a really strange position of either risking their health by going to that in-person meeting or being in a remote location that needs to, according to the law right now, needs to be open and accessible to the public. This has resulted in occasions that we have heard of from some of our members. Some elected officials have resorted to sitting out on the curb or their front step or in their car when it's been cold, or just so they can participate in the meeting and be at that accessible, open location to the public. And at the same time, we do have some of our members, some of our local governments are holding meetings still completely remotely. And so those elected leaders do not have to make that difficult choice on how to participate. And the inconsistency here is really what we're asking you to fix. House File 820 is a fix through a session law, specifically addressing the cap between the beginning of this year and the sunset is July 1, 2021. It's retroactive to the date of January 1, 2021. So essentially there's no cap between January 1, 2021 and July 1, 2021. As long as the other statutory requirements are met, of course, for the medical exception, these elected officials that are impacted currently will be able to attend meetings remotely without the cap until June. And that will allow them to fulfill their civic responsibilities without having to worry about their personal health. Also, I will note that we are all hopeful, we're all optimistic that the vaccinations will be more widely distributed for COVID-19. So that is why there is that time frame that to accommodate, hopefully, when the cap no longer really will be as big of a deal. Is July 1, 2021 is what we're asking for. And as mentioned already, there is a letter in your packet that reflects that this is something that a number of local government associations are supporting, in addition to the League of Minnesota Cities, Minnesota School Boards Association, the Association of Townships, and the Association of Counties are all in support of this bill. So thank you. I am done with my remarks, but I will stand for any questions. Thank you for allowing me the opportunity to testify.
Thank you. Well, you're still here. Are there any questions from the members? I see Representative Hoyt.
Madam Chair, I just wanted to note that I finally made it to the meeting.
Thank you, Representative. So noted. Okay, I'm not seeing any questions. Is there anybody present that would like to testify on this bill? And at this point, I'm not hearing or seeing anything. So if there are no questions, I'm going to proceed Representative Cagle, would you like to do a wrap up and then we'll take the vote?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This bill really just addresses, you know, the situation we're in now. And so I hope we can get your support. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. And Josh, would you take the roll, please?
Representative Mason.
Aye.
Representative Elkins.
Aye.
Representative Quam.
Aye.
Representative Berg.
Aye.
Representative Bolden.
Aye.
Representative Hewitt.
Aye.
Representative Mecklen.
Aye.
Representative Olson.
Aye.
Representative Joachim.
Yes.
Madam Chair, we have 9 ayes.
Okay. Thank you very much. That means the motion prevails. And I forgot to say that I renewed my motion that House File 820, as amended, be recommended to the State Government Finance and Elections Committee.
Thank you, members.
Thank you so much, Representative Cagle. Have a good day. Next, we have Representative Elkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move that House File 1140 be recommended to be re-referred to the State Government Finance and Elections Committee.
So we're done with that. And then...
I do have an author's amendment.
Okay. Do you want to move the A1 amendment?
Yeah, the A1 amendment is a technical amendment. Addresses a point that was raised by the Department of Administration's Data Practices Act. In the current law, requires that votes of a body be kept in a journal, and it wasn't completely clear that the minutes of a meeting would constitute a journal. So this amendment clarifies that, yes, meeting minutes are a suitable method for recording votes.
Okay. And are there any questions of the author on the amendment? Not seeing any. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. And would you like to proceed, Representative Elkins?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. So last year when COVID hit and we were all thrown into a tizzy, including our other units of state and local government, I took some time and dived into the open meeting laws to see how flexible or inflexible they might be in terms of accommodating the way of doing business that both we and other units of government in Minnesota were conducting their minutes. Meetings and discovered that there's all kinds of really arcane references to technologies from 20 years ago. And that clearly, while we were, you know, coping that, you know, during the interim, it would be good to take the opportunity to address that and clean things up. And so I reached out to the League of Minnesota Cities and the Minnesota Council on Government Information. And they, you know, convened a working group with a broad range of stakeholders at all level of government, plus the press, other advocates in favor of open government. And the bill that you see before you today is the result of their work. And testifying on behalf of the bill today are Irene Gao from the League of Minnesota Cities, and Matt Ayling from the Minnesota Council on Government Information. And the two of them get like 99% of the credit for this. They just did amazing work on shepherding all of the stakeholders through the process and drafting a really good set of changes, updates to the ordinance to bring the open meeting law into the 21st century. So most of the changes are just, you know, clarifying technical references, but there are things in there like removing, you know, charges for participating in remote meetings. Zoom is free, and so I'm going to turn it over to Matt and then Irene to answer any questions and offer any comments. So I think Matt, you're going to go first.
Certainly,
Mr.
happy
Ealing,
to.
Ealing, if you would identify yourself. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Matt Ealing, Minnesota Coalition on Government Information. Our thanks go out to Representative Elkins for initiating the work on this bill. It's been helpful to walk through this process with him and with others. As Representative Elkins notes, the events of the past few months, immersed as they have been in remote communications technology due to the pandemic, have really provided an opportunity to take a close look at the various remote meeting provisions of Minnesota's open meeting law and how they function. The open meeting law has been part of Minnesota statutes since the 1950s. We believe it's an important part of Minnesota's open government transparency legacy. Initially, that law solely regulated access by the public to physical locations where government entities were conducting their meetings. That's still one of its main purposes. But over time, as technologies developed, provisions of laws were added to facilitate government entity meetings through the use of various communications technologies under specifically delineated circumstances. And those remote meeting provisions include specific criteria governing when and how state government and local government may conduct so-called remote meetings during the course of their regular business, as well as how all government entities may conduct remote meetings during a pandemic or emergency circumstance. And those circumstances entail a slightly different legal standard than the other meetings. And so the bill before you contains various technical modifications that the working group has identified and updated to these various remote meeting provisions. At a high level, these contain a modest reorganization of the statute for readability purposes. Those of us who were looking at it over the course of time saw that it was difficult sometimes for a reader coming into it cold to understand how the provisions were structured. So we did a modest reorganization of those. There's updates to the various technology references, as Representative Elkins has mentioned. And in particular, an issue that's important to our board is that there's some clarity added and some guidance added to how, during a pandemic or emergency circumstance, a public entity will handle a public comment period. That's a question that's kind of come up for our board, and I know others have faced that as well. So other than providing a thanks to Representative Elkins, I'm happy to stand by for further technical questions, and I'll turn it over to other testifiers. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Ms. Gao, would you like to proceed?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Irene Gao, and I am with the League of Minnesota Cities. I also, along with Mr. Ealing, do want to thank Representative Elkins for encouraging stakeholders to get together and provide this needed update. What I will say is that we probably didn't catch everything in terms of updating the open meeting law and as Mr. Ealing had talked about related to technology, but we did try to catch as much as we could. There are a couple of other things that I wanted to add to what Mr. Ealing had provided. What I do want to say is the stakeholder process resulted in a lot of really good conversation and an understanding of where one another were coming from. And we actually worked quite hard at the specific language, for example, in the definition of interactive technology. We had a really good conversation about providing the ability to have technology that would allow people to hear and see. But we did also have conversation that acknowledged sometimes there are things on the user's end that may not allow both that hear and see capability, such as a visual impairment, or as we've learned through the pandemic, sometimes bad connectivity can be an issue. But the obligation from the government's perspective is to provide a venue to be able to do so, either through software or an application program. I did also want to point out something that Representative Elkins had noted. As times have changed, when there was used to be a requirement for when the public would monitor from remote sites, that there would be costs that could be passed on to them. Government acknowledged that there is no need to do that anymore. And so we accordingly made changes to that. And the final thing is what Mr. Ealing had brought up. There is clarity in there in terms of public comment periods and what happens when you're either in a pandemic or a state of emergency situation, and provided clarity in this bill that would say, however you were holding public comment periods before, you will have to continue to do the same. So, Madam Chair, I am similarly happy to answer any questions. Thank you again, Representative Elkins, for your leadership on this.
Thank you. Mr. Heller, if you would unmute and identify yourself and proceed.
I guess I'm next.
Yeah, you are.
Okay, my name is Rick Hiller. I unofficially represent the Twice Exceptional and People with Print Disabilities. Ask that the record would reflect that. Come to testify at Aikens Bill here, specifically 1140, I believe it is. Going to, I'll ask people to go to lines 1110 or 110 through 12, specifically just moving the see and hear aspect forward from page 4, 8, and 11, which strikes the school board information out. Specifically, when I go and testify at school board meetings, which I do regularly, they don't provide captioning, and they're not required to. You have to use Section 508 law. I thought it was kind of interesting. Another example I could give you is went to a special education advisory panel for at the state of Minnesota, and they were struggling with the whole idea that when I requested captioning, that they were going to determine it was if it was private or public data, and if they could forward to me. They struggled for almost 6 months. They eventually decided internally that they would release me that information so I could re-review it. Just like this meeting here, Zoom meetings, you don't have captioning. It's discriminatory. Why? Because real time, you could have it. Number two, on the other side where you have it, doesn't have it either. So right now, your own meetings are discriminatory. If you had captioning somewhere for real time, because this is my schoolhouse right now, is interacting, you know, you with the public and stuff like that. So what's missing, I believe, is closed captioning. I mean, I understand seeing and hearing somebody, which you can't see me, right? Okay, so the other piece of this is when we talk about the deaf, how are we all inclusive? We're not. So the piece of this is plugging that in, you know, to your own self, and then looking at school districts and on how they don't provide captioning now. I only testified once about 5 years ago to see if they would provide captioning. One out of five large school districts in the state of Minnesota, one provided a sign language interpreter. Otherwise, they looked at me and says, where's the person? The whole thing is universal design provides multiple means of representation, meaning you get it two ways now. You get to see and hear it, but also you get to hear the word, but also see the spoken word. You get it two ways. What you want to do is mesh together people's sensory so they can understand what's going on. So that's my suggestion on this. And by the way, does it have cost? Well, it likely may not now, but it did then. And it does cost, for instance, for you to use a captioner, you have to go through SWIFT and through the LCC, the Legislation Coordinating Commission. And they make the programs available for captioners at the legislature. They will not use Zoom. They have their own third-party services that they use for that. And you need notice for that. So, and obviously third parties do get paid well. Court and part of the record, at what point is that captioning part of public record? Because when I spoke to Ms. Weber, the director for the LCC, she says she doesn't have any guidelines regarding voicemails that I've left through Jenny Nash, the accessibility person for the house. And she'd have to talk to council. So I think this is kind of a joint conversation you need to have with your leaders too, on what is data practice at the legislature, even though they're exempt. And since we're creating this group meeting coming this summer for giving recommendations back to the legislature on Section 508 law, that's something else to consider in this process. So anyways, that's all I have to say about that. And anybody wants to see what was said at the Special Education Advisory Panel, they're welcome to that. However, it doesn't have the time stamp on it like they normally have done, but that's all I have to say. And thank you again for this opportunity to speak. I'm open to any questions from any of the audiences. So, and by the way, if anybody supports this, would they raise their hand? You don't have to do that, by the way, because I know it's a one-way conversation. And I do appreciate it again. Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, Mr. Ayling, Ms. Gao, if this was an item that was discussed in the stakeholder meetings over the interim.
Representative Elkins, this particular issue about closed captioning did not come up during the stakeholder discussions. I think it's worth a further discussion. It gets into legal areas beyond the open meeting law, but it's worthy of further discussion, I feel.
Thank you. Any other?
Ms. Gao.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Elkins, the issue of accessibility is something that we've discussed amongst cities, I'll say, and I know other government entities have discussed it as well, and obviously in relationship to your bill around the website accessibility. Yeah. And in other ways as well. So it is part of the conversation. But to Mr. Heller's, he had pointed out that there's a section that is deleted around school boards. It actually was duplicative because school boards are already covered under the open meeting law generally. And that's why when stakeholders had talked about this, instead of having it be duplicative, we had talked about just deleting this.
And Madam Chair, I know for that, some of the platforms, Madam Chair, are starting to build in real-time closed captioning. Zoom isn't offering it, but some of the competitors are starting to. So this is I see another good interim project for myself here, kind of at the intersection of this topic and digital accessibility. So Mr. Heller, I'll make a commitment to you that I'll reach out to the Minnesota Council on Disabilities, bring them into the discussion as well, and we'll work on that one as well, because you're right, of course.
Thank you. And I'm not aware of any other testifiers, so we can start the questions. Representative Kwan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And in connection with the discussion we've just been having, if we were to take the approach of where Minute and the state helped be more of an umbrella resource, we might be able to assist the local governments to be able to get the best price on the hosting and compatibility with accessibility and a helpline and etc. And I think that might be the best use of the state being useful to cover and support having 1,000 entities working and trying on this versus 1,000 people that can go to a hotline or pick from a smaller menu of state aggregate contract negotiations for hosting and products, a little more uniformity. I think that would be a way to go. And I have talked with both an author of a bill on our committee here and the Senate author on how we might be able to leverage that. So I want to make sure that both the testifier and others listening, that we have people working on this and working towards improving it. Thank you.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Kwan, I agree with you 100%. I think when we start working on this one, we'll definitely engage with Jay Wyant and the Offices of Accessibility at Minute and the Council on Disabilities so that we can look at this comprehensively and make sure that we are leveraging the resources that Minute has to offer.
And I think that will be definitely appreciated. Are there any last questions? Not seeing any. Representative Elkins, would you like to do your closing comments?
Yes, I'll renew my motion that we re-refer House File 1140 back to the Committee on State Government Finance.
Okay, thank you very much. And Josh, if you would take the roll, please.
All right. Representative Mason.
Aye.
Representative Elkins.
Aye.
Representative Kwan. Representative Berg.
Aye.
Representative Bolden.
Aye.
Representative Hewitt.
Aye.
Representative Mecklen. Representative Olson. Representative Joaquin.
Yes.
Representative Quam.
Aye.
Representative Mecklen.
Aye.
Representative Olson.
Aye.
We have 9 ayes.
Thank you. The motion prevails. So Representative Elkins, you are on your way. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next, we have Representative Haley. And if you would like to come and identify yourself, and I will move your bill, House File 738, and it will be being referred to the State Government Finance and Elections Committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning. Thanks for having us on your committee. House File 738 is a simple bill. It's from a community that I represent, Lake City, Minnesota, and they are seeking port authority status. I will turn over a description of what they are trying to accomplish through this status. We have both or 3 people on the line today to testify. Mayor Mark Nichols, the chair of their EDA board, Tom Dwelly, and also their former chair, Mark Fayette. And I believe that Mr. Dwelly will start first. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And Mr. Dwelly, if you would identify yourself and proceed.
Yes, Madam Chair. Thank you very much, and committee members for allowing us to testify, and also for Representative Haley for bringing this forward. I'm the chair of our Lake City Economical Development Authority, and we are seeking again to become a port authority like our neighbors to the north, Red Wing and Hastings, and our southern neighbors, Wabasha and Winona. And I've been on the EDA board for a number of years now and served on the city council for a few terms and a county commissioner. So I appreciate your service to our community and our citizens. If you're not familiar with Lake City, we are right in the center of Lake Pepin on the shores. We call it the South Shore of Minnesota. And Lake Pepin's about 27 miles long, about 3 miles across. And we have a strong agricultural presence here in Lake City. We have a Ryzen Milling flour plant and railroad that comes through, and they ship both on the railroad and by trucks. We have an active commerce there. We feel that the becoming a port authority will give us some additional resources to continue to work on our waterfront. We have one of the largest marinas on the upper Mississippi with 635 slips. We have a federal pier that goes 700 feet out into Lake Pepin. It's about 100 years old. And we're looking toward the future with the potential of Viking cruise lines coming up and down the Mississippi, potential for a ferry service going across our lake to Wisconsin to bring people back and forth is a dream that some people are have. So we just have watched the successes of our neighbors and the resources they have. And we feel that becoming a port authority will give us some more tools in our toolbox to continue to improve our community and develop commerce in Lake City. So.
Thank you very much. I'm thinking, why don't we hear from all the testifiers first before we do the questions? And next, do you want Mr. Fayette to go next?
I believe so.
Okay. Again, if you would identify yourself and proceed.
Yes, good morning, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is Mark Fayette, and I'm here today, as you know, I'm representing the Lake City EDA. So good morning from Lake City. You see behind me the unfrozen state of the lake at the moment, but this was obviously taken on a warmer day. I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify before you and to respectfully request your approval to establish a port authority in Lake City. Like Tom, I've been honored to serve on the EDA for at least the past 10 years. We've accomplished a lot in that time. If you've come through our community, you can see some of the results of our work, but it's not done. As a port authority, I see the opportunity for our community to be open and even more open to interstate commerce, which is really what opening up our waterfront to the cruise lines and to other means of transportation will do for Lake City. I also see that it gives us a better opportunity to make connections with federal agencies. Tom mentioned the government pier, which is a federal project. It was built by the Army Corps of Engineers. It's an aging piece of infrastructure, and it will need investment in order to remain a viable piece of infrastructure for our marina and for our community. You know, we have done a great deal to grow our community, but I see there's a lot more to do. As I said, I do hope that you approve our becoming a port authority. And with that, I thank you for the opportunity to testify, and we'll look forward to any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other testifiers?
Yes. Yeah, Mark Nichols. Yes, I'm Mark Nichols, the mayor of the wonderful city of Lake City. And thank you, Madam Chair, for this opportunity, and representatives and staff and all the stakeholders that are on today. We truly appreciate your work that you do for our state. Do you know, our other two testifiers did, and our representative Haley did such a good job. I'm just going to end this by saying thank you. And I truly appreciate it. And to Representative Haley, you're such a hard worker for our area. And it's easy to say that, but we truly mean it. So thank you. And we're available for questions. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions from the members? I am not seeing any questions. So Representative Haley, if you would like to do your closing comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Dwelly, Mr. Fayette, and Mayor Nichols. I am so proud to represent Lake City, and I appreciate the committee's support, and we'll be moving on, I believe, to state government finance. This did pass the Senate and is going to the floor in the Senate. So I want the committee members to know that we have support in the other body as well. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Again, I'll renew her motion that House File 738 be re-referred to State Government Finance. The clerk will take the roll, please.
Representative Mason.
Aye.
Representative Elkins.
Aye.
Representative Quam.
Aye.
Representative Byrd.
Aye.
Representative Bolden.
Aye.
Representative Hewitt.
Aye.
Representative Mecklen.
Aye.
Representative Olson.
Aye.
Representative Joaquin.
Aye.
We have 9 ayes.
Thank you very much. The motion prevails. Representative Haley, you're on your way.
Thank you, committee members. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Having no further business, are there any questions, comments before we adjourn? Not seeing any, we are adjourned. Have a good day, everybody.